And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this nice, cool Saturday morning. It's very, very good to be with you, and I thought to myself, Lord willing, I will be there tomorrow morning, as I spoke to someone that wished me well on the radio yesterday evening. Oh, yeah, somebody of great stature called me, probably what I would call a VIP. That means very important person. And they actually wished me a good program. I thought, man, how nice of that person. Alrighty, I'm glad to be with you today. As far as the order of business today, I've had several requests, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to... I have no idea what that is. I'm sorry, that's my cell phone going off right here. It's saying there is an Amber Alert. San Antonio, Texas, looking for a 2010 Black Dodge Nitro. Okay, had nothing to do with the radio station. That was my cell phone going off for an Amber Alert. So, if you happen to be driving down towards San Antonio or in that area, that would be Dustin. What you're going to do is you're going to look for a 2010 Black Dodge Nitro, license plate HDDO725. All right, back to the order of business here. Frequently I get requests and topics to discuss and things to... So I'm just going to kind of cover this piece by piece, and I may not do it in order, but these are issues that people have asked me, and a lot of times people ask me very interesting questions. And I can tell when people ask questions, they are wanting to help themselves. Doesn't the Bible tell us that the Lord rewards those that diligently seek Him? So it is good to seek information, especially the information that can improve you. So, first question has to do with chronic kidney disease to the point where someone needs dialysis. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to share some information with you. This week a lady asked me, she said, I did not take baking soda because I did not know what it was for. And even though sometimes I feel like I explain things, you know, sometimes what I think that I do and in reality may be two different things. So here goes. What is my reference here? Okay. Bicarbonate supplementation slows the production of chronic kidney disease and improves nutritional status. The Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. So this would be one of those journals that is geared toward the top specialist in the field that cares for the kidneys. And I'm sure if you've been to your nephrologist or your kidney specialist, then they have already covered this topic with you. So if you're bored, just bear with me because there's going to be some people that haven't heard this. Here goes. Chronic kidney disease affects over 26 million Americans. I don't know about y'all folks, but when I see a number like that, 26 million Americans, I realize that's not exactly 10% of the population. But isn't that like an awfully big number? Could you imagine what our nation would be like if we didn't have 26 million people with chronic kidney disease? Well, I'm not criticizing anyone, but I know if somebody had their wish, they would say, I just choose not to have kidney disease because I've got work to do. I have things that I need to accomplish. I have things on my heart and goals that I want to achieve and work that I want to use to bless the Lord and other people. Yeah. Just imagine that. 26 million people have kidney disease. That's a shocking number. And it goes on to say that often it has no medical cure. That means there's not much to offer other than dialysis. Instead, doctors generally focus on trying to slow the progression of the disease. I'd say that's a good strategy. Surprisingly, there is a common household substance that can do just that. A daily dose of sodium bicarbonate, simple baking soda, has been shown to significantly slow the decline of kidney function in some patients with advanced kidney disease. You see what this is saying so far? It's talking about people with advanced kidney disease. What I want you to do is I want you to consider that maybe, what if you just have moderate kidney disease or slight kidney disease, or maybe you're just a hair above, you know, one of the markers they'll use on a lab test. When you look at your lab test, you look at a marker that says BUN, BUN. That is an acronym that stands for blood, urea, nitrogen. I would say that's a very precise marker that gives us information about the well-being of the kidneys. And so when your BUN comes back at 27 or 28, the kidneys aren't doing so hot. I mean, they're stressed. You tell me, how do you want to interpret this? When BUN is high, would you just come to terms with the reality that your kidneys are under stress? And so I know that some people practice a technique called self-deceit, fooling themselves, believing something not... Yeah, who cares? I mean, you can tell yourself all day long you're in great shape, but when your BUN's high, that ain't reality, folks. It would be really good if you said, you know what? I'm going to take care of myself today. I heard Dr. Morgan say that drinking Cokes all day long is just a recipe for destroying the kidneys. Yeah, I probably sound like a broken record saying stuff like that. There's another marker on a lab test called glomerular filtration rate, GFR. So if you look at GFR, what if it's right at 60? Well, they say that if it's below 60, that's what you see in kidney failure. Now, that would just be the initial stage of kidney failure, but you know what? It's time to wake up and smell the coffee, if you want to say it that way. But where the rubber meets the road, do you want to just wait until it gets to be 18 or 19, where the doctor says we're going to have to install a port and start dialysis? No, no, no. Take action now. So maybe this is for people that are just right there, just a hair above kidney failure. All right, in the study published in the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, researchers gave a small daily dose. I think when you hear this, it's going to be just almost borderline ridiculous on how little of the stuff it actually takes to get the job done. And here's what it was. 1/4 to 1/2. You're probably thinking I'm going to say cup. No, it's just a teaspoon. Not a tablespoon, but 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon of sodium bicarbonate in tablet form to one group of patients with advanced chronic kidney disease. But whether you say it's tablet form or you just take the loose baking powder, excuse me, baking soda, that's what sodium bicarbonate is. If you took 1/4 of a teaspoon, stirred it in water, and then drank it, who knows, that might be superior. But whether it's a tablet, a capsule, I just know any time that you have to put something in tablet form or capsule form, the price goes up. Do you like saving money? I do. Do you like to be efficient? I would like to be more efficient. How about I say that? So what they did was they just gave 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon of sodium bicarbonate to a group of patients that had advanced chronic kidney disease. And these also had metabolic acidosis. That just means their body's not in good working order. And they did this over a period of 2 years. So it's not like it was just a test for 1 week. They did this for 2 years. The patients taking the sodium bicarbonate saw their kidney decline decrease greatly. I know that's kind of pretty wordy right there, but that means they did not get as bad as what the physicians expected, to a rate that it was 2/3 slower than experienced by patients who did not take the bicarbonate. What's more, only 9% of the baking soda group had rapid deterioration of their disease compared to 45% of those not given the sodium bicarbonate tablets or baking soda. The researchers noted that bicarbonate supplementation slows the rate of progression of renal failure to end-stage renal disease and improves nutritional status among patients with chronic kidney disease. Did you catch that little phrase right there? I did. It improves nutritional status? Really? Really? You're talking about dirt-cheap baking soda improving nutritional status? Folks, I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. When's the last time you've heard of somebody that has kidney failure or kidney disease that they've actually been given this recommendation written about in a peer-reviewed, very, very scientific medical journal for kidney doctors? Baking soda is inexpensive and available at any grocery store. For those that have chronic kidney disease, Frank Schallenberger, MD, recommends adding baking soda to water and sipping it slowly over 15 to 20 minutes. That's if your physician clears you for baking soda therapy for chronic kidney disease. It says drinking it too quickly increases the risk of an upset stomach. Consult your doctor about how long you should continue this safe and effective therapy. Yeah, you know, sometimes the details are a little bit upsetting. I'm thinking, you know, do they go to this much trouble to say, be careful about drinking a soft drink because the phosphoric acid will just destroy your kidneys? I've never heard someone go overboard saying that. Boy, you can't believe what I'm looking at right now. There is a peach-colored glow to the sky outside. It is just gorgeous, beautiful. Thank you, Lord. All right. So you asked the question, what is baking soda for if you have kidney problems? And there's your answer. So I hope that gives you something that you can really sink your teeth into. Now, just as maybe this ties in with the topic of the kidneys, because I want to give information, and you know, to some degree, you're going to have just a little bit of faith in what I'm telling you, because I don't always remember where I put every article. Are you kidding me? I long to be more organized. That's probably my goal for today, is to be more disciplined and organized. But I can assure you that if you eat green vegetables, they have such a tremendous benefit upon the kidneys. So can you just have faith and buy into what I'm telling you, that maybe green foods might be good for the kidneys, might put you in a better light? You might go to the doctor and have a follow-up blood test, and it may turn out better. Well, who doesn't want that? But you have to do it. You're probably going to say, but Dr. Morgan, what could you tell me? Okay, I get it. Green things are good for the kidneys. I agree with that. Okay, good. What if you countered and said, well, what's bad for the kidneys? Well, sodium bicarbonate, or baking soda, it has a gentle alkalizing effect. Okay? The pH of your blood is supposed to be slightly alkaline. Did you know that between the lungs and the kidneys, they probably do more to maintain the pH of your body than probably any other system that we can talk about? Is it in your best interest to have healthy lungs? Oh my word, yes. Is it good to have very clean, healthy, vibrant, robust kidneys that can do their job? Oh my word, yes. So if you eat green things, are you helping your lungs and your kidneys maintain your pH? Yes. Now, if you drink a lot of soda waters, and I don't mean baking soda, I'm talking about pop or soda like Coke or Pepsi or Dr. Pepper, if you drink, I don't know that I'm going to worry if you drink it once a month. That doesn't bother me at all. I'm not going to choose that to be my battle or war point where I'm going to lose it and freak out over that. I'm not going to. But if you're drinking soda waters every day, I don't care if it's a diet soft drink, it has so much phosphoric acid, you're literally putting your kidneys under so much strain. I mean, they have to work a whole lot harder at maintaining the pH when you put soft drinks in your body. How about we just talk about that? So, between sugar and soft drinks, that would be a recipe for trying to destroy your kidneys before you're 97 and a half years of age. All right. On that topic, I'm going to take off into another question. And this is an article that it's adapted from, it's just very brief. The Food That Makes Alzheimer's Worse by Dr. Frank Schallenberger. Schallenberger, MD. And so I like this too. And maybe this will tie right into the conversation of how do we improve the kidneys. And you do not improve the kidneys by increasing consumption of refined sugar. I can tell you what the quote of the week was. The lady told me, she said, she had cancer, by the way. She turned to her oncologist and asked a question. She said, does sugar play any role in cancer? And the oncologist said, no. Which means you're free to eat as much as you want. That is just completely, that has got to be the most ridiculous statement that I ever heard. I mean, have you all ever heard that maybe, I mean, besides me saying it, have you ever heard that maybe cancer is fed generously by sugar? You ever heard that cancer cells are sugar junkies? Meaning that's what they want. You give them what they want, and guess what happens? They grow like a wildfire. All right. This brief abstract is called Sugar and Alzheimer's, which I realize this is different. But you know what? To me, this really ties into the topic, because what do the kidneys do? The kidneys have got to be one of the most sophisticated, intricate filtration systems that you have in your body. And if you're living in reality, what if you say, you know what, I'm getting more tired than what I was 10 years ago. I don't have the energy, and I notice that usually around 4 in the afternoon to 7 o'clock, I just have nothing left in the gas tank. And when I get home from work, I mean, I just don't have anything. I just sit down, there's nothing I can do but watch TV and eat. I just have nothing left in the gas tank. Well, you know what? That may be an indication that your kidneys are under stress. And it would bode well for you to pay attention to this tremendous blessing of health that God's given you. But, alas, everything in this world requires work and effort, doesn't it? And so this is no different. Here's Dr. Schellenberger's article. I'm giving him the credit for it. Studies have shown that sugar and high-carbohydrate foods cause increases in blood sugar, which in turn increases the risk of dementia. This is particularly true of the risk of dementia due to Alzheimer's disease. Because of this connection, researchers began to study how high blood sugar contributes to the development of Alzheimer's disease. That's what a lady told me the other day. She said, I'm always interested in reading information about Alzheimer's because that is what took my father's life, and that's what took my brother's life. And so here's some more information for you, ma'am, to kind of flesh out your question. The researchers, examined a group of mice that were genetically prone to Alzheimer's, and they fed them enough high-carbohydrate foods to raise blood sugar levels. Then they measured the levels of amyloid plaque, which is a substance that definitely contributes to the destruction of brain cells. Folks, if a doctor orders an MRI, or a nurse orders an MRI, or a physician's assistant orders an MRI, I don't care if a massage therapist orders an MRI, or the stocker at Walmart. I don't care who orders it, but if they come back and the results from the radiologist show that you have amyloid plaque in the brain, that is not good. Whew! You got calcification in the brain? Not good. Something's going to have to give. So if you've got amyloid plaque in the brain, which is what I just said, it's a substance that contributes to destruction of brain cells. And here's the second part. And blood sugar in the hippocampus region of the brain, that's the region that controls memory, especially short-term memory. So if they've got plaque there, not good. The amount of amyloid plaque that developed in the hippocampus of these mice directly increased as their blood sugar levels increased. Does that give you one clue? Folks, I know I'm kind of preaching this morning a little bit, but wouldn't that be very, very cruel of me to bring up a topic on the radio that plagues mankind and then say, well, sorry, there's no solution to it, but I mean, wouldn't it be horrible if that was my topic today and I said, amyloid plaque in the brain is what causes Alzheimer's? But I'm not doing that. I'm telling you specifically that as blood sugar levels increase, the amount of amyloid plaque increases also. So there's one point that you can sink your teeth into, and this is very, very precise. Does that tell you that maybe we've got to get the blood sugar under control? Now, for simplicity's sake, if you have a blood test, what is normal blood sugar? Normal, if you want to say optimal, if you want to say the word ideal, if you want to say great blood sugar, if you want to say hugely great blood sugar, 100% perfect, how about we use the number between 70 and 80? Those are great numbers. Well, what if your numbers aren't 70 and 80, between 70 and 80? What if yours is 98? That is not ideal. And that's what they're showing with these mice that are genetically programmed or predisposed to developing Alzheimer's. As they give them high carbohydrate foods, guess what happens? Their blood sugar goes up. Duh! Anyway, the amount of amyloid plaque that developed in the hippocampus of these mice directly increased as their blood sugar levels increased. And the effect was even greater in older mice that already showed early signs of Alzheimer's, indicating that high carbohydrate meals not only contribute to Alzheimer's, they also worsen it. So if you had a person that had memory problems, drinking 6 Dr. Peppers a day is not a plan that's going to play out real well. That's what this research proves. All right, here's the last of it. Eating foods that are high in carbohydrates increases the likelihood of developing Alzheimer's later in life. You mean, Dr. Morgan, you're saying what you do now has an influence on how well you age and what happens later? Yes. If you're 60 years old, or 55, or 72, you're in the prime of your life. Now, that's just my interpretation. But you have a lot to give. There's work to be done. It's a blessing to be presented with hard manual labor. I better be careful what I'm saying, because I may have to do that today myself. But if you have Alzheimer's, yeah, you're not going to be real productive. You're not going to accomplish a lot, and that's sad, because I want you to, and I know if you had your way of having your wits about you and having reasoning and common sense and having a good memory and a great brain and having ambition and drive and motivation and desire, you can do it if your brain's working right. But if you have Alzheimer's, you're probably not going to be real productive. Foods high in carbohydrates, such as grains and sugars, cause a significant rise in blood sugar levels. Decreasing high carbohydrate intake will decrease the risk of weight gain, diabetes, heart disease, and the progression of Alzheimer's. So that is a specific answer to a person that called me and was trying to ask for that the answer to that question. Now, this is the last one that I'm going to cover, but this is trying to answer a person's questions also. But, you know, in this, I realize there's a lot of different angles on this, and I'm not trying to make one conversation or I'm not trying to make one topic a panacea. But if you haven't heard these things before as it relates to your body and your health that God's given you, then maybe this is going to prove to be very beneficial. Okay. Now, when I read who the author was of this, there's one of the author's name is Okuyama. That sounds Japanese. And then there's another one, Hamazaki. There's another one right there that sounds Japanese. Don't you think that Okuyama and Hamazaki sounds Japanese? It comes from Expert Clinical Pharmacology 2015, but the third name in there, well, guess who that is? That's Dr. Langjian. If you're going to go see Dr. Langjian this next week, tell him you heard Dr. Roy Morgan talking about him on the radio. Anyway, he's one of the authors or the researchers. You know what the title of the article is? Statins Stimulate Atherosclerosis and Heart Failure. Pharmacological mechanism. I'm not getting tickled because I'm excited about people dying from taking drugs. That's not why I'm just thinking to myself, Oh, my word. How hard it is to get the truth out and to get people to believe this stuff. But here goes. So, if you have a beef over this, then you call Dr. Langdon's office and you complain to him, because he's the one that wrote this article. You see how I took all the pressure off me, so here goes. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the U.S. To reduce the danger of strokes and heart attacks, statin drugs such as Lipitor are often prescribed to lower high LDL cholesterol and to reduce calcification of the coronary arteries, among other reasons. A new study examined some mechanisms by which statins may actually promote calcification of the arteries. Statins can be toxic to the mitochondria. That means poison. And they can inhibit the synthesis of important nutrients such as coenzyme Q10 and vitamin K2. I would say vitamin D also. That's just me adding to the article. Sorry. This results in the impairment of the heart and blood vessel muscle function and can lead to calcification. I mean, would you knowingly take any drug or substance that you knew was going to cause calcification of your arteries? The last time I checked, calcium belongs in bones, right? Yeah. How would you like to go to the doctor and say your calcium score of your heart is at 14,000? I just made that number up. That's over the person would be dead if it was that high. Are you healthier when your arteries are stiffer and calcified like bones? No, you're not. All right. Statins also have other negative side effects such as brain fog and muscle pain, but the biggest concern by far is the possibility that they may actually promote heart attacks and other coronary events. Heart failure and atherosclerosis are epidemic, and statins are one of the most commonly prescribed drugs to prevent them. What a tragic irony it would be if these drugs actually served to aggravate the very problem they are trying to prevent. The authors of this new study propose that statin treatment guidelines be seriously reevaluated. The results of the study demonstrate the need for such an assessment. Oh boy, I'm glad I'm not the one that's saying that, because I just would never be so bold as, are you kidding me? That is just borderline ridiculous. You know what? What I want to know is, what does this mean? If this is a true study, and it is, what does it mean if a medical doctor prescribes a statin to one of the patients, or a nurse does, or a physician's assistant? What does that mean? Does that mean they're responsible for causing an early demise or causing a heart attack or plaque building up in the brain or the arteries or calcification? Yeah, I think they are. Now, just because I say that doesn't make it so, because I really don't know how the court systems work, and I don't understand. Well, I mean, I have a little bit of understanding, but it's just a little bit. What happens when drug companies have a team of attorneys ready to respond to lawsuits stating that their loved one, whether it's a father or a mother, grandparent, or maybe I could say a child today, because I've seen some young people placed on statins. What if they have a harmful effect because of the statin drug, and they want compensation because of the death of a child? I really don't know everything that the attorneys say. I haven't been privy to a court case. But I'm telling you, I would imagine that an article like this might be entered into the court docket as evidence. I'm not really sure how courts work, because I haven't been to court. Let's hope it stays that way, too, because if I had my way, I would just have a quiet, peaceful life. All right, I'm through. I've tried to answer some questions that people had today, so if you want to call me and ask a particular question that's relevant to you or someone that you love, you know, that's one thing that I have noticed about this program. People are continually not calling for themselves, but other people they love. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Dr. Morgan. It's been quite a while since I've talked to you. I had a brother-in-law tell me that he heard a lady call in a couple of weeks ago about shingles.
Mm-hmm.
And I have them, and it's a severe case. And I was you could tell me or give me any insight to what the causes are and the duration and what I need to kind of look forward to and how I can prevent it.
Well, can I ask you some questions?
Yes.
When did you first have them? Or when did you first notice that you had pain from shingles?
It's been 3 weeks. It started in my ear. I had a loud ringing, and then the pain started. That was on a Friday night, and the pain started on Sunday, and I started breaking out on Tuesday.
Is it all going away real quick?
No.
Okay.
The pain is still there.
You don't even know you can't see my body language over the radio, but I'm like humped over, shaking my head with my palm on my forehead, feeling sorry for you. I know it doesn't really count for much, but I'm thinking to myself, oh, this poor lady.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I can tell you what you want to see happen. If you were to have a cut on your hand, don't you want to see a scab form pretty quick as an indication it's healing properly?
Yes.
Well, that's the same thing that you want these to do. You want those little suckers to dry out quickly and form a scab. When that happens, I have great confidence.
Well, now they have it. Actually, it hit the side of my left side of my face, and if you were to draw a line down the center of my face to the left,
oh yeah,
it
uh-huh.
encompasses all that.
Well, then let me tell you what I would do if I were in your shoes, okay?
Okay.
And all this, I mean, all of this can be challenged, but I'm pretty sure there's nothing that I'm going to tell you that's going to be either harmful to you, it's not going to cause any damage, it's surely not going to be poisonous, so you don't have to worry about me killing you. So isn't that like a good thing that I'm not going to kill you today? Anyway.
Wonderful news.
All right. Well, let me just kind of break it down into different categories, and you tell me what you think about each of them. And if you want more information, I'll be glad to help you. But what I would do if it were me is I would strongly consider that the largest gland within your immune system, which is called the thymus gland, it's got to play one of the most important roles in how your body responds to a viral entity. So we know that the herpes zoster virus is what is responsible for shingles. And so it's a virus, not a bacteria, not a fungus, it's a virus. And so part two of the equation is, anytime that you have, whether it's a cold or the flu or any viral infection, and shingles is part of that, if it lasts for longer than 7 days, then what that means is your thymus gland is not able to rise to the occasion and respond to it by producing antibodies. And so this is my oversimplification, but when your body is able to observe that there's a virus growing in a nerve, and that nerve covers your face, then it's supposed to respond in like manner by telling the thymus gland, or the thymus gland says, you know what, why don't we produce some antibodies against that virus? And antibodies are supposed to go to that area as a way to tell your immune system, hey guys, come over here, here's the battle here, look here, don't go to the toe, go here to the face. And so if you have suffered longer than 7 days, this means that your thymus gland is not generating sufficient amount of antibodies. Does that make sense?
Yes, please. Right. Go ahead.
All right, but here's a solution. I have a sales pitch for you today. It's a very simple one. Go to the health food store, and if you don't know where to find it, I don't care if you have to shoplift and steal, I'm just joking. But if you will, ask for thymus extract. Thymus is spelled T-H-Y-M-U-S. And sometimes they're labeled thymic proteins or thymus, but I just love using thymus extract. And whatever it says on the label that they recommend that you take, I want you to quadruple that. You're just going to have to accept that through faith. I can't prove that to you over the air.
Mm-hmm.
But all I want is I want to deeply nourish and feed your thymus gland so it can get the ball moving and increase antibody production real, real fast. Now, point number next. there is a substance in the universe called vitamin C. If the Texas Board of Examiners would allow me to give vitamin C injections or IVs of vitamin C when somebody has the shingles, then I would by far and away have the greatest success rate of any physician in the area treating shingles. They would not be able to hold a candle to what vitamin C would do, but then again, I'm very old-fashioned, and I would say that vitamin C is as old as the beginning of time. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would.
So I didn't create the thymus gland. I sure didn't create vitamin C. But studies show that when you take, and so your plan B is, well, can I just take vitamin C? Well, yes. I want you to take lots and lots and lots of vitamin C. I had a interesting case yesterday. I had a gentleman that came to see me that has a long, long history of severe thumb pain and hand pain and arthritis of the hands. And I believe him. When he grimaces in pain, when he moves his thumb, I mean, you would believe him too, wouldn't you? So I said, let's try a simple experiment here. And he said, well, what do you have in mind? I said, let's use a whole lot of natural vitamin C. And he said, okay, I'm sick of the pain. You know what he told me when he came back after 1 month? This is the words out of his mouth yesterday. He says, my right thumb is 90% better. Look at this. And so, can I just suggest to you that vitamin C plays a very powerful role in helping your immune system recognizing friend from foe. And vitamin C is very useful to fighting infections. So if I were you, I would purchase natural vitamin C and I would take a lot of it, along with thymus protein.
Okay. Well, you know, I thought when my shingles would begin to dry up and my face begin to clear up, which it is somewhat mm-hmm. after 2 weeks, mm-hmm. but the pain is excruciating. I haven't even been to sleep tonight. I mean, today.
Well, the next thing that you have to do is you're going to, and I'm just telling you what I think you have access to. There's a lot of ways to do this, but you need sublingual B12 right now, ASAP. The faster, the better. And did you know that vitamin C and B12, those are in the category of water-soluble vitamins, which means they're water-soluble. I mean, even what if you overdose on it? What if you, do you have a husband?
Yes, he's had a stroke about years ago.
Well, what if he forces you to swallow 50 tablets of vitamin C or B12? Are you going to die? Absolutely, it's water-soluble. It just washes out through your urine. You don't have anything to fear. And it's just, to me, it's ridiculous, but physicians today seem to treat B12 as if it's a toxin. So if your B12 levels are a hair high, they just about have a spasm on the ground and going, how are they going to live? It's water-soluble. You don't have anything. It's just ridiculous. So you need lots and lots and lots of B12. Now, there used to be a product, and I want to say it was developed back in the 1970s, but the product is called Zostrix. You ever heard that term before, Zostrix?
No, I haven't.
Does it almost sound like a play on words for zoster, herpes zoster? So it's what Zostrix is. It's made for shingles. And what it does is it completely removes all the pain from shingles. What you're going into is a condition called post herpetic neuralgia, which is what you do not want. So we're going to put a stop to it today.
Okay.
And so the product called Zostrix, I think it's spelled Zostrix, X as in X-ray.
Okay.
Or if you're Espanol, X Reos. That's one of the few words I know. Sorry. Did I just waste your time? But if you will, you'll look up Zostrix, and it's made from cayenne peppers. I know it's going to be brutal, but if you'll do that, it'll start to turn all that stuff off.
Now, are you talking about taking it or applying it?
Topically, applying it.
Okay.
You apply it topically. Now, I can tell you what I would do if it were me. I'm just pretty low-tech. I would go get some calcium bentonite clay. I'd make a mud pack, and I'd smear it all over my face and ear. And then I'd have my husband hose me off in the backyard later today.
That would be interesting.
Well, you know what I'm getting at, is if you make a clay pack for your face, but that's going to start to pull all that stuff out of your skin.
Mm.
That's what you need right now.
Yes, well, see my tongue, and I've got a tooth now that's turning.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably contributing to why your thymus gland's not able to work. It's just your bone marrow is probably quite exhausted. So if the doctor were to draw a blood on you and check your white blood cell count, it's probably going to come in way below 5 or 5 or below, and that just means the immune system is just bone-weary tired, and then that's what you've got. The other option you have is putting raw honey on that. Or one thing that I have always liked, I probably shouldn't tell you all this stuff because somebody's going to think I'm a weirdo and I'm worried about my reputation. Thanks for laughing.
You are.
But what you do is you take an aloe vera leaf.
Okay.
And just split it down the middle and you lay that fleshy, juicy part right over the area where you have pain and leave it on there as long as you can. It's going to pull all that out of there. It's phenomenal.
I have a plant. Wonderful.
Good. See, if you can't do anything else, you can do that, can't you?
Oh, yes.
Well,
yes.
With your husband's condition, can you go to the store and get some of these things, or are you stuck at the house unless somebody comes over to watch him?
Well, no, I can leave him. I can leave him. He just had a right brain stroke. It affected his vision, both eyes in the center to the left, and then he got hit on the head with a branch and caused bleeding on the brain, and that really did a number on his vision.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I'm a caregiver, but I can leave, and I will see if I can get some of this stuff today. Here we have a lady that is an herbalist, and she has a shop downtown. So.
Oh, good, good, good. So hopefully they will have the very elixir that you need.
She also told me I might need some probiotics.
Well, that is a very, very good suggestion. I like that very, very much. I think you should take and run with that.
Okay. Well, Dr. Morgan, I appreciate your time, and thank you, and I will get back with you and let you know how I'm doing.
Good deal. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Yes. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
There's a phone line open. I realize I failed to give the phone number. It is 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. 5257. So you're welcome to call and join me on the radio and ask me whatever questions you want. Boy, do I like questions related to health, though, because I want you to feel good. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Morgan. I have a sister-in-law that is dealing with C. diff. She had it. The doctor treated her for it, but now it has reoccurred. Is there anything that I could recommend for her?
What if I told you that there was a remedy that has a 95% cure rate within 24 hours? Would you believe me?
I would.
Well, maybe I should tell you what the cure is first before we... Okay, here's... maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, I read an article about C. diff, and I'm just literally shocked at the torture that a person has to go to. So can I just kind of make up a scenario here?
Uh-huh.
Let's say that a person is just minding their own business and the doctor says, you know what, we need a colonoscopy. Or they're going to do a procedure like to excise hemorrhoids or something. So they go in for some type of simple procedure. But they develop an infection while they're in the hospital. You've heard of that before, haven't you?
Right. Uh-huh.
But you know that Clostridium difficile is one of the most wicked antibiotic resistance. So I can't even remember the numbers because they're over the top. Meaning, if a person has C. diff and they have this continual ongoing diarrhea and infection of their bowels, how many rounds of antibiotics? It's just astronomical how much mm-hmm. antibiotics they have to give a person to kill them. And of course, what I would say is, good luck having an immune system work right after having that many antibiotics. We'd have to majorly rebuild the person. But anyway, let me get to the cure.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been completely scientifically researched. It has a 95% success rate within 24 hours. So You would, I mean, after I say something like that, wouldn't you wonder, well, shouldn't this be the first thing that they try?
Right.
Oh, my word, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's why it is. They ask a family member that loves this person, can we get a stool specimen from you?
Right.
And then all they do is they just implant it, and that's the end of the story. 95% success rate, and it's just called a fecal transfer.
Uh-huh.
So that's it.
You're kidding, okay.
No, I'm not. I wouldn't joke about that because, that's, I mean, This is almost as serious as a heart attack because I've heard of many people dying from C. diff.
Right.
Yeah, there was the major university in California, I think it was UCLA, if I have that wrong, forgive me. No, ill intent meant. But they demonstrated that even though they put all the colonoscopy equipment in the autoclave, do you know how a dentist, if they scrape your teeth, well, they don't take that scraper or scaler or that pick, and they don't just put it in somebody else's mouth. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
My father-in-law's dentist, they put it in that hot oven called an autoclave, and it's like a pressure cooker under high heat and steam, but they're trying to sterilize it and clean it.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, and it does a good job. You know a little bit about dentistry, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, well, but my point is, they had two people that just died because it didn't sterilize the colonoscopy equipment, and all they did was they transferred a toxic germ from one person to another because it didn't kill it.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's as simple as that. And I think that gastroenterologists have got to get with it. Now, I know that sounds harsh coming from a person like me, but, I mean, come on. How could you argue with a 95% cure rate or success rate even after an average of, 27 rounds of antibiotic therapy to get the job done?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, so 95% success rate.
Okay.
But in the meantime, this is what I would not do, though. I would not go purchase potent antibiotics and then get a bulb syringe from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And then suck the antibiotics up into the bulb syringe and then insert it into the colon and then apply it that way. I just would not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would be applying probiotics directly to the source of irritation, and there would probably be a rapid improvement. Oh, wait. Oh, rats, I blew it. So lots and lots of probiotics is what you need. You're fighting fire with fire.
Okay.
That's about that's plan B, but I'm telling you that works too. And just literally you have to flood the person's gut with probiotics. And you know what I told a person this week? I said the number one prediction of a chronic infection that never goes away is going to be the consumption of sugar. So you
mm-hmm.
can't both kill the organism and feed it at the same time. There's a whole bunch of problems with that, protocol, so lots
right.
of probiotics, but it would really behoove the person not to eat a drop of grain or sugar or fruit for about 2-3 weeks.
Okay.
Anyway, that's one take on it.
Okay.
What else can I help you with?
That's going to get me started.
well, that's kind of a mouthful, isn't it?
It is.
Well, I wish you the very best, and I hope it works out, but sometimes there is tremendous power in just asking the doctor. I have read that there's a 95% cure, or heard, whatever you want to say.
Uh-huh.
I have heard there's a 95% cure rate of C. diff. If we can find a healthy family member that can donate some of their colonic bacteria or flora to
uh-huh.
the sick person. What do you think about that, doctor?
Okay.
But what? All these articles are relatively easy to look up. I mean, if you were to type in information, there's no telling how many articles it would show that's proving, which, can I say this in reverse?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't feel this way about the situation. If you walked in my office and said, Dr. Morgan, there is a cure for mental illness and this is what it is, well, just because I've never heard of it, is that going to embarrass me? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, well, tell me more. What can I do to help somebody? But if you approach a gastroenterologist with information, either they're going to come to the table with a clean spoon and say, I've been begging for somebody, let's do it. Or they're going to say, no, we don't want to do that. Well, 95% cure rate, isn't that like a phenomenal piece of information?
It sure is. Uh-huh.
Anyway, well, let me know what you think about that, but I wish you the very best, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And yes, ma'am, you are welcome. The phone number here at the station, this program is Health Essentials if you've never heard it before. For all I know, you're driving down the road, you don't normally come through East Texas, or you're listening over the internet in a different state. I'm just so tickled to have you join me. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I had been diagnosed with AFib last fall, and then they put me on Crestor, and it really messed with my muscles. I could hardly walk. They took me off after about 33 days, and I still have an issue with real soreness, especially in my hip down to my knee area.
So that just hadn't resolved yet?
I guess not. I'm hoping that it's going to continue to get better. I hope this is not going to be something that's permanent. But now the doctor is wanting me to see, and what do you call the heart doctor that handles the electrical part of the heart?
Oh, well, electrical physiologist,
yes,
or something like that.
Yes, and I told him no. I said, no, doctors are just trying to take over my life. So what I guess I'm asking is, I'm wearing a heart monitor is why he suggested it. He wanted me to wear one for 30 days because I'm trying to get off of the two medications that I'm on. Mm-hmm. And is there anything that I can take? He says he's noticing a flutter when he's reviewing the results, daily
right.
results. I don't feel anything. He said that's not unusual. I just don't want to have a stroke. So are there things that a person can take naturally that help keep your blood clean, your clots down?
Can I ask you a personal question? And I realize I'm putting you on the spot. Can I ask you a question?
Sure, absolutely.
Do you believe that God has created the body to repair itself?
Absolutely.
Given the right circumstance?
Absolutely.
You didn't even let me finish and I agree to it.
I know natural is really what I would rather go, and God gives you a solution for everything.
All right.
Well, let me give you two or three different takes on this, and hopefully we can kind of flesh it out. I would say, I am not trying to pry into your life and ask for personal details, but is there any possibility that you had a significant amount of stress prior
yes.
to this?
Yes.
Okay. There is a substance that is produced by the human organism in response to stress. It's called adrenaline.
Okay.
Can we just agree that maybe adrenaline could be a little bit toxic toward the heart? Can I just agree with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. There is a mineral called magnesium. And so magnesium is shown to be, you know, they used to use magnesium sulfate in every hospital across America. Because if somebody showed up with signs of a stroke or a heart attack, they would immediately start magnesium. So if I told you that magnesium has just a little bit to do with heart function, the last time I checked, magnesium is actually an electrolyte. Of course, the cardiac electrophysiologist knows that because it has electrical activity, and that's their forte. But magnesium has many, many roles in the body. Number one, magnesium greatly helps improve how the blood flows through the heart and how sticky the blood is. And so can I just give you a simple suggestion that magnesium may play a very powerful role in heart health because it helps keep the platelets from clumping and sticking together. Now, that doesn't mean that Roy Morgan is making a panacea out of magnesium, but when it comes to AFib, oh my word, magnesium can be a great source of salvation to you. So could you consider that?
Absolutely.
Did you know that magnesium plays a vital role in helping your body break down and dispose of excess adrenaline? To me, that is very advantageous because, like I started off with, adrenaline is extremely toxic to the heart, and in my mind, it could cause AFib because it breaks down the heart. Just like if somebody prescribes Crestor. You ever heard the term cardiomyopathy? That's kind of what I read earlier by Dr. Langjian and the two Japanese dudes, that it can actually damage the heart, which is completely counter to what they're prescribing it for or what their narrative is.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, I'm a little bit cynical, though. Just because somebody says something doesn't make it so. I'm sorry. If God says it, I'm choosing to believe all of it, even if I don't understand it. But if a human says something, I'm thinking, well, I can question that.
So yes.
I have uncovered many tidbits of information concerning AFib and the role of zinc. So could I promote zinc to you?
Okay.
In addition to magnesium.
Sure.
I would say that vitamin C has got to be one of the most phenomenal nutrients in the universe. But then again, I didn't have anything to do with its creation. That's, you know, our heavenly God and Father designed vitamin C. He's smarter than I am. That's not even a legitimate statement. He knows everything, I know nothing. But vitamin C, it helps your body break down adrenaline and stress. And so vitamin C would be important. Now, if it were me, if I had AFib, now, are you taking a blood thinning agent?
I am.
Which one?
Oh, my goodness. What?
Xarelto?
No, it's metoprolol. I'm sorry. Xarelto, yes.
Well, I was just guessing. Is there any chance you're taking a one called amiodarone?
No.
I hate that drug. You know I hate it? Because I've seen it destroy every person that's ever taken it. I haven't seen one person that's taken that for 2 years that hadn't been destroyed. Anyway, okay, calm down, Roy. There's no reason to be upset over that drug. Anyway, there is a herbal remedy called hawthorn. And it is so specific. It's so lovely toward the heart. It's almost like what the heart wants. Now let me do my crazy talk for a second. Yeah, I don't care if you go to the cardiologist and say, what should I eat? And he says, I'm going to take you out today to McDonald's for a Happy Meal. That's probably not what I'm going to recommend to help the heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say more of a paleo-type diet or Mediterranean-style diet or an Okinawan diet. It's just basically meat and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that the heart loves fat as a source of energy?
No.
All right, I'm going to give you a pop quiz today. I'm going to give you three choices. Which country has the lowest occurrence of heart attacks? A, Russia. B, United States. C, China. Or D, Thailand?
China?
Wrong.
No,
it's Thailand because they consume a boatload of coconut oil. Anyway, I wasn't trying to make you feel bad. I was just trying to be funny, sort of. So coconut oil is a fat that's good for the heart, but then again, I would say, you know, wholesome, clean butter is too. And olive oil. Oh, my word. What physician would stand up and say olive oil is... You know what? I heard the commercial on the radio. It's just really appalling. How stupid do they think we are? When they're talking about how fat's bad, but you should consume canola oil?
No.
Are they nuts? Yeah, that's just great. All for a buck. That's all it's for. Canola oil is rotten for the heart. But olive oil, what kind of oil do you think that they used to anoint someone with oil with back in the Bible days or in the Holy Land?
I would assume it would have been olive.
Oh, me too. I don't have any proof of that, but I'm going to go with your answer because you sound like you're super intelligent. So olive oil, so things like avocados, but I would just eat a meat and vegetable diet. If it were me, if I wanted my heart to heal, I would steer clear of carbohydrates as far as grains and sugar. You'll get plenty of carbohydrates when you eat cabbage. Now, you can eat cabbage on Xarelto, can't you?
Yes.
But do you want to be on Xarelto the rest
of
your life?
No, that's part of why I'm agreeing to wear the heart monitor is because I want to get to the point where I can get off of that medication.
Well, all of these are going to be starting places, but I'm going to try to convince you in the 30 seconds I have remaining, God has designed the body to adapt and adapt quickly if it's given a different set of circumstances. So if you make these changes, personally, I think that your husband should do all the dishwashing from here on out, all the mopping and sweeping and vacuuming while you go out and go for luxurious walks through the woods. What do you think?
Well, he does a lot of that already.
Great. What is he, husband of the year material?
Yes, he is.
Well, I have no choice but to say, way to go, dude. You're awesome. Well, unfortunately, we're completely out of time, but I really appreciate your phone call, and I appreciate you for calling in.
Thank you, sir. You have a blessed week.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
All right, you're listening to KBGS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler Long.